Before we begin, we wanted to issue a content warning for this week's episode. There is a frank discussion of sexual violence, assault, and trauma that some may find disturbing.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Happy New Year, Fright School! Happy New Year, Joe!
Happy New Year, Joshua! Happy New Fear! Happy Yay. New Queer!
Yes, all the things. All new, of those things.
New Fear, same Queer.
There we go. I like it. Yes, here we are back. Maybe a week late, but that's okay. We decided to extend our vacation a little bit. So, but we're back. And once again, we're doing our new, this is like our, become our tradition where we're doing a deep dive into a whole franchise. So fun. But we'll get to that, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
How have you been doing? How have you been holding up in this new year?
I've been doing well.
Excellent.
So far.
Appropriately fine.
I am appropriate. I have said that a lot.
Me
God
too.
Bless Eric J. Yes. Brown for that gift.
Yeah, I've been using it a lot too. Anytime somebody asks me how I'm doing, like, oh, appropriately fine. And I stare off into space.
People don't know what to deal, don't know what to say when you say it like that.
Yeah, which is fine. And we just move the conversation along. Man, I had fun at your family's holiday celebration. I'm so glad I did not burst into flames.
No, you did not. You disgraced us with your presence.
I did. Well, and your family's so cute because they did seem genuinely worried about us. Like after, so just context, Joe's family does still celebrate the religious aspects. You know, it's like, oh, God in heaven, why are we talking about this? Yeah. It's Christmas. thank you, Roseanne. But your family, you know, they still believe in that part of the tradition and, you know, had a lovely singing and prayer session that I got to witness. And that was very fun.
Yeah,
I didn't even ask you if you wanted to talk about this. We're just doing a dive.
You just came into the, upon an old time prayer meeting.
They know from last year, you know, you did your deep dive Catholicism-zers,
exactly.
Your catechism.
And now you understand why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I invited Joshua to come and enjoy Christmas, basically mainly to eat a bunch of food.
Yes, we definitely were there for the food. And maybe to see you, but mostly the food.
Yeah, mostly the food. And Joshua came and Jeffrey, and it was really nice because for my family, we do still celebrate the religious aspect of Christmas. And it's also from like a cultural context because we have a lot of our own cultural religious traditions that may not be what like the wider, like the more popular or wider westernized version of Christians and Catholicism Catholics would celebrate.
Yeah.
So we did that, and Joshua was there, and it was fine, and he did not burst into flames.
I did not, and neither did you all, you know? It wasn't as if God, you know, you weren't an affront to God for inviting us.
No, we weren't, you know.
He did not punish you with the hellfire.
We were supposed, you know, the good book does tell us that we must, you know, we must, the first will be last, and the last will be first.
Bring it, you know, to
dine with sinners.
Yes, and invite the strangers in. And,
yes.
You know, doesn't get much stranger than us, so.
No,
okay.
It certainly doesn't.
But it was just sweet, because you're just family, you know, afterwards. It's like, was that all right? Are you all, like,
are you
asking
okay?
Us about the prayers and stuff? Yeah. And, you know, was that weird? Like, no, it's not weird. I grew up in fucking Ohio with the Southern Baptists. Like,
yeah.
If y'all wanted to speak in tongues, do it. Not that they you know, your aunt or cousin or somebody asked me if I was worried that
oh, yeah,
all
she was like, oh, you're all, we're all like a bunch of cult. She said, oh, what kind of cult is this? And I was like, well, you know, not wrong, right? Not wrong in that, you know, religion and cultish behavior. But I think it's something that like because of how we do it, it always feels like we need to explain ourselves.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you don't, but I understand that. If you have people that are just there watching you, I'd also want to be like, I'd be uncomfortable. Like if I had religious beliefs, I think, because they can look, you know, it can look odd to people or seem silly or whatnot.
I wanted to start everything off with Father, Son, and House of Gucci, but I didn't think that was going to go over well.
I wish. That would have been great. I would have died laughing.
But yeah, and then the food aspect was delicious.
Yeah, oh my gosh. All the food that you all had was amazing.
Yeah.
So we got good.
I got to share with Joshua the food of my people.
Right.
Homemade, so not the stuff that we get at, you know, from Uber Eats, but definitely.
No, it was all incredible too.
Yeah. There was a full pig. There was a little lechon pig.
Whole ass pig, that's true, sitting there staring at all of us.
Joshua looking at it like, can I have the skull?
I was being serious, but you did not bring it to me. So
no,
but I think it's a lot of work too. You have to like boil them and stuff to like get everything. Anyways, it's okay. It's fine, Joe, that you didn't get me a skull, but
the skull of a porcine skull.
Yeah. It was just there. I was just like, oh, I mean, it'd be so easy.
Don't worry. When I get the goat,
there we go.
Yeah.
Yes, I definitely would love a goat skull. Anyways, what are we talking about? Christmas. Yeah, so anyways, I just wanted to say that it was a very good time and your family's very lovely.
Thank you. And how was your scary Christmas?
It was fine. Yeah, it was a good time. We put a puzzle out and that I didn't think it would be as engaged with as it was. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe... By him asking this question, now you all know that he did flake, as Californians are known to do, and did not show up.
Or was I busy helping my family prepare
you
for your arrival?
15 minutes away. You could have come for... Well, that's true. You did have to sacrifice some things and build the altar and all.
Exactly.
But I was
sad
that you weren't
there. We had to encircle the house in salt.
And there were others that asked, like, where's Joe? You know, and I'm like, I don't fucking know, and I'm not going to text her either. Fuck her.
I'm surprised
but you were missed. But
I'm
anyways.
Surprised that some people still don't quite understand that, like, I do see you very regularly.
Yeah.
So if I'm not there... Like, it's not an affront. Like you said, we'll just use that word all day.
Right.
It's not an affront to you. It's more like, I am going to see you.
Well, yeah, but it's also, it's like, you know, the holiday.
But it's different.
It's family, you know, so getting together. But anyway, so we had put out a puzzle. So a lot of people worked on the puzzle, oddly enough. Or not oddly. I mean, I put it out there so there was something to kind of do along with other games. But we ended up just kind of working on the puzzle the whole time. And that was really fun.
Nice.
And people brought food, you know, the usual. Lots of delicious stuff to munch on and eat and drink and be merry and all that. And I showed Violent Night. People enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm kind of making as I'm progressing, I'm making like a softer, scary Christmas. So it's like the stuff that I showed was a little more benign, I think, than past years. I showed the Black Christmas remake. That was actually fun to watch with people and talk about because of, you know, like our discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
When we discussed, like, you know, men don't need the help of, like, primordial ooze. But apparently they do. So, yeah, it was super fun. I was very, very glad to get the chance to do it again.
Yeah.
And see people.
And how was the New Year's, your book retreat?
Oh, that was good too. Yeah, we had a little dance party. That was fun. I had kind of sent out to everybody to give us like two or three of your favorite songs to dance to. Like, what song do you want to just lose your mind to? And so we built a big giant playlist and hit shuffle and had a dance party.
Nice. That's nice.
It was cute. Yeah, yeah. For New Year's, because every day we read for most of the day. You know, when it was light out, and then we would kind of do activities at night. So, like, people did, like, what do you call it? Like, PowerPoint presentations. I didn't do one, but I'm like, I'm cooking and doing a bunch of other stuff. I'm not prepping a presentation on top of this. I'm in school. I don't want to make a presentation unless I absolutely, like, gun pointed at me, have to do it for a grade.
Got it.
So, I didn't do that, but other people did. That was very fun. Another night. Well, for New Year's Eve, we like got glammed up, so did makeup and hair. That was a really good time. And then the dance party, and then into New Year's, slid into New Year's. We had a movie night. Oh yeah, we watched Glass Onion the first night.
Oh,
for
nice.
Movie for our, like our movie night and our welcome, you know, together event. And then another night we had a Moulin Rouge sing along. Yeah, we played that. Oh no, I think that was the same night. I think we watched that after the Glass Onion. We had like movie night the first night, settling in. So yeah, it was a great time. Yeah. And I haven't been up for New Year's in a long time, it feels. So, because I don't really celebrate. You know, we've talked about this before. I'm not really into New Year's. So I just, it was fun to do it with a group of people. And,
sure.
Yeah. You know, sure. Have fun.
Yeah. Well, look at that.
Yeah. Let's see. What else did I have written down? I have Xmas at Joe's. So I wanted to talk about that. And then we've New Year, New Rue. But you're not watching yet.
I kind of want to talk this out with you on the air.
So, oh, great!
You know, if you've been a long time listener, you know that Drag Race comes up a lot, and especially when there's a new season of it. I'm not as called. I don't feel as called to watch or excited to watch this season.
Yeah,
like I was excited. I think the last time I was truly excited to watch Drag Race was All Stars, All Winners, because of the nostalgia element of seeing queens that I know and love. And
yeah, of course.
And I didn't watch season 14. I don't know if I'm planning to watch 15. And I think also like I'm at a point where I want to lift up and see what I want to focus more on getting excited about my local drag.
Yeah. I love that.
So, you know, I've been going to more local shows, not necessarily shows at the bars, but like, shows that are just like, you know, truly local queens that are homegrown here, which has been really cool. Yeah. And I attribute that a lot to my friend Jake in Baltimore when I went recently, because he is very, dialed into his local girl scene, the local Baltimore drag scene.
Awesome.
And I was just like, wow, that would be really cool to see what the queens here are like right now.
Yeah. I like that.
Our local houses. So, yeah, I'm not as excited about the newer seasons.
Yeah, I don't feel like there was a time where I felt more connected to it, like as a part of queer culture, but there's part of me that feels like it's not really for us anymore.
No.
It also has the problem, and we've talked about this before, where like, you know, all the people look, you know, generally speaking, very attractive out of drag. Mm-hmm, it's kind of not that people haven't been in the past, but it seems like more and more they're looking for people who, you know, have a certain aesthetic about them, as defined by these standards of what is and isn't attractive. Because even the ones that they're like, oh, these are the hot people of the season, it's not necessarily that I find them attractive, but I just mean in general, in that kind of way.
Yeah.
They all have the same face, because now we're getting more and more into the point where a lot of them are in their, they're young, you know, a major chunk of the cast are like super young, who've grown up on Drag Race.
It's on MTV now.
Yeah, it moved to MTV. But they all kind of, like somebody came out and in the new season, and we were both like, oh, well, she looks awesome. You know, Detox should sue. Like, she looks like she's got Detox's face. Mm-hmm. Some of them have just, there's like a really standardized, like Instagrammable, TikTokable drag makeup face.
TikTokable, tick clockable.
There we go. Tick clockable. So it's like great makeup, no talent, you know, no ability to like really make good drag.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I'm a skinny white boy in a dress.
I feel like they need to do like a new season where, so backstory, the TV show Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay, this season's Hell's Kitchen is, it's basically like it's a battle of the ages. So it's older chefs versus younger chefs. So there's like 30, 29 and below, and then like 35 and up for this year. I feel like they need to do some sort of handicapping like that for the next season, right? Where it's just like, okay, no queens under 35. and no one skinnier. Like, right. It's like you need to all be somewhere in the range of Alexis Mateo now and like Stacey Lane Matthews. You know, like we want older, bigger queens. And I would be curious to see how that would go.
Yeah, I don't know. And even that, I feel like, is that really the answer? Like, it's like, I don't want to necessarily be drag police because I don't want to be the opposite of the problem that we have now where, like, these 15, 16-year-old white girls are all over Instagram telling us what is and isn't drag. You know, it's embarrassing to see, like, these children, literally children, like, on Jackie Beats' page or Coco Peru's page or the Lady Bunny's page, like, telling them what is and isn't drag or accusing them of stealing from, you know, some girl they saw on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's like, I've had this makeup for 30 years, you little fuck face, you know? So it's like, there's part of me where it's like, I don't want to police it. Cause like, you know, it has to be pushed, but I feel like there's just a,
but if it's not being pushed, then
it's like homogenized. It's like, I cannot put my finger exactly on it. And it may take time, you know, to really kind of be able to pull back and see the full vision. It's just this, like, you know, I don't know. I'm very anti-assimilationist, I think, when it comes to like queer culture. And it's like, I don't want to see, and all culture, you know, all culture does not need to be reduced to its lowest, you know, form, like boiled down to like the most appealing thing to the masses. And to me, there's like an element of that on Drag Race that I think is hurting rather than helping. Whereas Drag Race didn't used to be like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a little bit more risk. But again, I'm also speaking after only seeing one episode of this, but it's something we've talked about for a couple of years now on the show. So I know I sound like a broken record, and you know, Michelle Visage has come out against, like, you know, we should just be happy that there's like queer people on television because they can take it away at any moment. Things can change, which I do believe. Mm-hmm. You know, this creeping like fascism that has been growing in our culture and is, you know, getting really scary. You know, people are showing up and threatening drag queens, you know, reading to children and, you know, these sorts of things. So there is a very real backlash that's lurking. So it's like, I do want to be, it's just tearing me in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
Of being supportive and being like, this is awesome. And yes, we should be on TV and there should be more of us on TV. But I also fight against the homogeneity that is also kind of coming out of that. You know, when you see things that used to be, like we were talking about that with like pop music and such, you know, because it's funny now, something that like, or not even pop music, but just general culture. Jenna Ortega showed up for one of the talk shows. I don't remember which one. Kimmel, who else? Fallon.
Sure.
One of them. Johnny Carson.
Yes. Joan Rivers.
But she was wearing an outfit that was almost identical to an outfit that Madonna wore back in the 90s for Erotica promotion, for her album Erotica, that like at the time was like, and now it's like people put on bondage gear to go sit on like national television, you know, on a, like a family quote unquote, you know, something that's like so insidious and like on all TVs in America, people are watching the show and people sit there in like dominatrix gear that a few years ago would have been like, so you know what I'm trying to say? Like just this idea of like, it's everything's just becoming very mainstream. And yes. I want both. I still want things to feel punk rock and feel, and I agree. I think if I got more into the local scenes, I'd probably see that that's still very much living, and maybe I just shouldn't hold a television show responsible for.
Well, no, I think you're correct. I think what we need to,
or it's more nuanced. A lot of things can be true.
A lot of things, duality, right? A lot of things can be true. We can hold many truths. And I think with Drag Race, we're at a point where we're oversaturated, and everyone, there are like legit stars that have come out from this that have used RuPaul's Drag Race as a platform. And so, you know, we're in this stage now where it's like, you know, the kind of impact that Bob, Shangela, and Eureka have had with We're Here, and, you know, the by extension, like the glorious uprising of Dragula, a show that I still haven't watched yet that I think I need to watch, because it's pushing it in a different, it's still like, it's Drag Race, but it still has its edge, and it yeah. has no, it doesn't want to be mainstream. Like, that's the other thing too, is that the RuPaul girls, all of that, they, there's a desperate need to be mainstream. And a lot of the girls who did this in the early years that have bucked against that too. And I really take issue with, in terms of mainstreaming, I just take issue with like straight people, and most of the audience, right, is like straight women, straight white women, of a certain age. But I take issue with it because like, I feel that there are, I feel like the place, the historical place in our culture that drag queens have occupied as these, as these artists, as like, you know, our first activists, as like having almost
this transgressiveness.
Exactly. The transgressiveness, but then also like the ministerial quality that they've have for the community in terms of, you know, being out there, being out and proud in a way that like is, their safety is in danger because of that. And so the, and I say ministerial in the sense of like, you know, we, they're there at community events.
Right.
Like, you know, they minister to our souls in a way using their art form.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. And about safety, and you've heard, you know, on the show, drag queens talking about like, yeah, my family was like, okay with the queer thing, gay thing, whatever, you know, however people identify, but
not good
drag was not it, you know, or my boyfriend broke up with me because I did drag, or his family forced him to break up with me because I did drag, or so it is still like operates within our culture, within queerness, as this sort of transgressive space and subversive space, and something that people still see as like dangerous in a way, or unwanted in a way, while at the same time having this like national celebration of it, in my opinion, under certain within certain parameters.
Yes.
Yeah. You know? So, cause it's like, would the people, cause like back in the day, like Sharon Needles got on, you know, and not to say I'm supporting Sharon Needles or anything in general, but just, she's kind of gory, bloody kind of thing. Well, she was on Drag Race. Well, now would her only choice be Dragula?
Yeah.
Would she even be able to get on Drag Race?
Yeah.
So there's also that kind of thing too, where it's like, I just feel like some more of the extremes are getting lost.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We've talked about this before, talked it to death, but yeah, it just debuted, you know, a couple days ago. So, you know, we're here again having the same conversation, looking into what it means. It's just really super weird. I think it's stranger for people my age, because I bet I do have to wonder about kids that are like 15, 16, 17, 18 who don't have like, and again, and on the reverse, there might be people older than me, 60, 70, who feel very differently. But it's like, I still remember a time where it's like, it was all unsafe. Mm-hmm. Like, no, like queer people were not celebrated the way they are now. But again, it also is under specific acceptance rules in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So as we've seen with many other cultures and how things get pulled and taken and sanitized and, you know, represented as something else. So anyways, whatever. I do hope, if nothing else, it does continue to create safe spaces for queer kids. Cause like I've said before, this is not in an attempt to be like, everybody should suffer and we should go back to like the dark days. I just want both.
Yeah.
I want us to be able to be transgressive and, you know, gender fuck and, you know, just bold and weird and underground in some ways, but also still get to be, you know, mainstream for the people who want to do that, and that be a space. So it's like, it just, I feel this like push and pull of acceptance and assimilation versus like, well, I want you to just like accept that I exist and to have a right to exist and not have to abide by your rules in order to be accepted by you.
Yeah.
I should still be able to be a fucking weirdo while also being queer and not have to,
and worry about, you know,
worry about normativity bullshit.
Exactly. And I feel like I feel like the shows that I've seen that are like purely local shows that don't have any name, quote unquote, names right. attached to them, have been the places where like the queens can get weird and yeah. they can do the weird stuff then.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, last year's winner, Willow, whatever. It's out
I know
there.
Her.
I can't help it.
Willow
she,
Pill.
She did some really strange shit on the show and won. So maybe that in and of itself, I guess, may go against my own.
Yeah.
My own thesis, but I don't know.
Well, because there's a certain level of confidence that you have to have.
Right.
And if you're confident enough that, like, I like weird stuff and it's very me and here's how it goes. And then you can see kind of, I'm curious with, it's not so like pre-season 14, obviously, but like, have you noticed that like the girls who get on there and like their whole personality is that they're pretty like fail almost miserably because it's like that's all of your identity and your confidence is rooted in the fact that you look good.
Yeah.
That you are looking fishy enough, but there's nothing deeper than that. Like,
right.
And to get on the show and just like, to get on the show knowing that, because it's been on forever, right? So, like, knowing that, like, you're going to have to act
right.
and you're going to have a personality, and you, no one's ever told you that you never had one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. And that pisses me off too when you see that, because it's like a total waste of space where somebody else more interesting could have been there. Mm-hmm. But again, every season needs both. You need people that you know you're going to cut right away. Production. That's the other thing. You know, so much of television production demands that they produce the show far mm-hmm. more than they used to. And that's yeah. something that becomes more and more obvious. Like I said, the new season has this set of twins, Sugar and Spice, which I can't with that. Like, anyways, but... And it's not that they're bad or anything. They're actually, you know, turning out to be, you know, in the first episode, people are like, oh, okay, I really didn't like them at first, but maybe they're okay. Like, they're interested. There's some stuff going on there. But it's so obvious that eventually they're going to, like, lip sync against each other, and one of them is going to go home, and it's going to be crying and a mess, and, you know, that's my sister. That it's like, it's so obvious. And there are these other things that are just becoming so obvious about the show that used to not be as, you know. Because it's so produced.
Yeah.
But whatever. Anyways.
We can't have surprises anymore.
Right. We all need to know exactly how this is going to go down. So it's, well, and that goes back. I mean, you know, when they had Alyssa and Coco on there, we're like, well, that's going to be a lip. Like, they're going to make sure that showdown happens at some point. Because it has to. So it's kind of the same thing. It's just becoming more just really obviously produced. But again, that's also not totally new. It's just more aggravating, I guess. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
I could just turn it off and not watch it.
You could.
Instead of complaining.
No.
It's not like they need me watching it, but...
No. You could come with me to a local girl show next time.
Which I actually would like to. So, anyways. All right. Well, we are going to take a real quick break, and then we will be back to kick off our A Nightmare on Elm Street deep dive.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. I'm Shane O'Hare of the Geekscape Games Podcast, the number one video game podcast on the Geekscape.network. Join myself, Derek Krennevelt, and a guest every fortnight as we discuss video game news, video game reviews, and dissections. That's Geekscape Games every 2 weeks on Geekscape.net.
All right, welcome back. So, yes, keeping with our January tradition the last couple of years, what did we do first? We did the Purge series?
We did the Purge, the first Purge.
The first Purge.
Well, no, we did the Purge first.
There we go. And then last year we did Scream. We did
Scream.
A Scream deep dive. Yes, Scram. Five Cream.
Five, yes. What would be this one be called? Six Cream?
Yeah.
Or Scree 6? I don't know.
They're doing something weird where it's like Scream and then the M, it's like it's highlighted so it's like the VI.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyways. So, Scream. So this year, we thought it would be fun to return to... We did A Nightmare on Elm Street in the first season.
We did.
Okay. I couldn't remember if it was the first season or if we waited.
No, if we... Yeah, it was the first season for sure. You had a couple slashers in the first season.
Yeah, we've just been doing this for so long that I can't remember we did what.
Dear Joshua, do you remember when we watched The Exorcist together? Do you? Joshua, wake up. Oh, God, he's dead.
anyways, I just couldn't remember if I put it in the first season or if we did it in the second, but, regardless, we have done the original and we've done Freddy 2, Freddy's Revenge, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
We did a documentary about...
We did talk about Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mark Patton / Freddy 2.
So we've been here before, but we've never watched a bunch of the other movies. No. So, and we're not doing all of them. We may come back around and pick up some of the, I don't want to say lesser. I'm going to say other sequels. But to kick off, we're going to talk about the remake from 2010. So this is like our compare and contrast episode, which we've done with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and some of the others that have gotten remakes. There's some other... We could recreate our entire first season with just like remakes, I think, at this point. I think just about every film we did, except Saw, has either a remake or like a requel. Because like even Blair Witch got that Blair Witch thing where it's like they bring back the sister. It's like a whole thing. It feels very requel-y. But almost every...
You could do Jigsaw for Saw. It's kind of a reboot.
Kind of, yeah. I wonder if they will ever remake Saw. Wouldn't that be interesting to get old enough to see like the entire Saw franchise remade? I'm sure it will happen as everything. But anyways.
Oh my God, hold on. Now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, we could do a remake... Or a reboot of everything in the first Amityville. And stuff that's also like older, remakes that are older too.
Exactly.
Like Thing from Another World is the thing.
Right.
Damn.
Yeah. And then we even have a prequel to that now.
Yeah.
Also called The Thing, because that's the thing to do.
Lord,
anyways,
Lord have mercy.
Sorry, we're filling time because there's not much to talk about with it. No, I'm kidding. There's plenty to discuss. But this was much maligned when it came out, Nightmare on Elm Street. We've got directed by Samuel Bayer. Screenplay Wesley Strick and Eric Heisserer, obviously based on Wes Craven's original. So Platinum Dune is the production behind this. So New Line and Platinum Dune. It's Platinum Dunes, which is Michael Bay's thing, I believe. And they did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, the Amityville Horror remake, the Friday the 13th remake. They're responsible for the Purge series, A Quiet Place. So, you know, they've been doing this for a bit, rebooting things. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I had read that so you've not seen the Friday the 13th remake yet?
No.
Okay. We probably will do it eventually just because... It's interesting. I think, one, we need to watch a few of the sequels first before we do it, because they did something that I actually appreciated about the Friday the 13th remake, is they kind of took the first three movies and then maybe elements of the others to do the remake, so it kind of condenses a lot of the mythology into, like, one film. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, in the original film, you don't get the hockey mask and all of that kind of stuff, so they obviously want, you know, if you're going to remake it, you've got to do the full Jason.
You need
Jason.
To have a ton of exposition to get there.
Yeah, so they kind of condense it all so they can kind of, you know, make the remake work. It's reimagined, much like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was reimagined. So originally, I guess the plan was to do that with A Nightmare on Elm Street, kind of take a few of the movies and pull elements from them, but then they decided to just try to remake the original or reimagine the original screenplay. Although there's still some things in here which we'll talk about in a little bit that I do feel are part of the other sequels that you will see as we continue on this journey, showing you some of the Nightmare on Elm Street films. But Yeah, so let's see. We've got Jackie Earle Haley stepping into Robert England's glove as Frederick Krueger.
Frederick Krueger.
And then we have, you know, another Scream King, as you were calling. So it's like Justin Long, Kyle Gallner, or however you say his name, playing Quentin. Who's sort of a cognate for Johnny Depp's character, Glenn in the original. And then Rooney Mara is our Nancy. And then other people from their early 2000s that you'd recognize from
Thomas
such
Decker.
Illustrious things as Twilight. And
Kellan Lutz.
Yes. Am I wrong? Were any of these people in the OC?
Because
they all look like the cast of the OC. Like, yeah, I feel like you could just replace them.
I wonder, I don't know if Thomas Decker was. Kyle Gallner was not in the OC, but he was in Veronica Mars. He has a great character arc in Veronica Mars. It's actually really fun.
All right. I felt I had to mention the OC because Joe has a new show, y'all.
I know.
White People Problems.
On the Geekscape Network.
Yes, on the Geekscape. Oh, shit. God, I'm the worst. I meant to mention that again at the top of the show. Like, yes, we are so happy to be on Geekscape. So fun. I love it. But anyways. Here.
Thanks, daddies.
Zaddies. So anyways, in watching this, I kept thinking that these people were probably on these kinds of shows. Because the woman who's playing, like, the Tina character, cognate. What was her name? Katie Cassidy. What is she in? I feel like I recognized her.
Katie Cassidy.
She was in the first Black Christmas remake in 2006. Oh, she was on Supernatural for a while.
Was she also in Charmed?
Charmed, like the old school Charmed?
Yeah, like, you know.
I don't know. Maybe as like when she was young.
Well, see, now I'm looking her up now.
Oh, she made her film debut in When a Stranger Calls, which is also a remake.
Yes.
I love this thing. Taken. She was in that, apparently.
She did a little Gossip Girl. See, so not...
Oh, there we go. And I think Gossip Girl, like, a lot of those shows get mixed up in my brain because I never really watched them. I only saw the character posters. And it's just like... White People Problems. That's like the best. Mm-hmm. That's the perfect way. So anyways, there we go. That's kind of a rundown of like the cast. Kellan Lutz, he's, you know, in the very beginning. Thomas Decker, like you mentioned, it's fun to see him. I just had watched that All About Evil, written and directed by Peaches Christ, and he's in that too. That was fun with Natasha Lyonne. What I love is, like, despite the reviews, I mean, this made $117 million, almost $118 million on a budget of 35. So
a success.
I mean, that seems financially successful to me. But, you know, given that there wasn't a million sequels, I'm guessing it wasn't what they were hoping.
Yeah.
But anyways, what were your thoughts on seeing this for the first time?
It reminded me of how long ago I saw the first one.
Yeah.
Because I also haven't revisited the first one since.
That's so funny because I probably watch that movie once or twice a year.
Yeah, I haven't revisited
it. It's another, like, a good bedtime movie. The music. It just lulls me.
I can't with you. It was really, it was interesting. It was an interesting one. I thought it felt very, it had the same kind of fear and feeling and tone as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
Yeah.
It's bloodier. Like, it's definitely kind of cashing in on that late aughts, early teens, like, really graphic horror.
Yeah.
It still has remnants of, like, you know, the fucking, like, like the Trent Reznor, like, do 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 do, like, in the beginning with how they're doing it. Like, it reminded me of, like,
Like the opening credits to Seven.
Yeah, it reminded me of, like, The Covenant and, like, Murder by Numbers. Like, that's what it reminded me
of.
So all said and done, though, I thought it was really fun. I thought it was, I thought that I loved a little bit more of the background than the original one did. In fact, like, I love when I did our friend Brennan, who's been on the show, he had a charity podcast, like mini series where he recapped Freddy's Nightmares. And I was on the first episode for that one. And the first episode of Freddy's Nightmares is basically the story of the original story of Fred Krueger, where he was a little diddler. He was a diddler on the roof. And I liked how they brought that in this time as well too. And yeah. I mean, there's nothing. Robert Englund will always be Robert Englund, and I like that Jackie Earle Haley didn't try to do an impression. Really did try to make it his own thing, and was a lot more menacing. But yeah, like it was fine. Like, I can see why it made a lot of money for them, but I don't think we need to have another one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Sorry, something you said about Robert Englund. I was looking up. He was supportive of Jackie Earle Haley playing the role because he thought he kind of would bring something different to it and not try to be Freddy. Would you watch this again?
Would I watch this again? Maybe in a group, but yeah. Like, I would watch like the remake of Texas Chainsaw, the first remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right, in a group. But like, because I think that that's what this type of movie is good at. Like, it has the jump scares. It's got the blood and the gore. Like, I think so. We're keeping track now, right? Of
the ones that you would
we're in
watch.
A new year, right? So we'll just keep track of it. But yeah, I would watch this. I would watch this again.
That's conditional. Yeah, like, you'd watch it again conditionally.
Yes,
there's others.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no very few. I would watch this unconditionally again.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the original. I love this series. It's just one of those things that, like I said before, I was born the year that this came out, the original came out. So I was Freddy was just always a presence in my life. My mother loved Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm, so I have a lot of nostalgia goggles for the series. But there are also things when you rewatch it that, like the original, that's kind of like, the science of sleep has come along. There are things that they didn't care to know or to look up or to try to recreate, or again, even the knowledge maybe wasn't there. The original Nightmare on Elm Street definitely exists as like a specific kind of document, I guess.
Sure.
But there are things when I look back on it and I'm just like, oh yeah, that is kind of ridiculous, or that doesn't make any sense, or like, none of these people seem sleep deprived. They all seem like, you know, things are fine. They're being terrorized, but they're just things that are kind of missing from it that I think the remake does a good job of pulling in. By no means yes, I'm going to keep the original. I would throw this away if that was the choice.
Yeah,
I would not. I don't think this is better than the original, but I do think there are things about the original that are kind of stupid in a way, just as there are things about this, but there are things in this that I do enjoy, such as like the sleep deprivation. Like, they really look it and they kind of seem to really go into like the science of a little bit. Again, I mean, it's a film, it's a slasher movie for like teens to, go to the movie theater and see. It's still very much in that kind of vein, but I like the conversation around micronapping and, what it can look like, which is, that's a real thing. That's happened to me. Like, if I try to like stay awake, like I will click off and I don't realize it. I do that way too often, actually. Cause I'm just, it's like, as you get older, it's like, man, you want to go to bed at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, and especially like coming back home, like from concerts and stuff, if we go to LA, I will be like white knuckling trying to stay asleep. So like bolt upright and just like
awake,
click off, you know.
White-knuckling,
like,
trying to stay awake?
Yes, trying to stay awake. What did I say?
You said asleep.
Oh, yes.
He was micro-napping just now.
I was. I just turned off. But yeah, trying to stay awake. And especially when somebody, when it's not Jeffrey driving, if it's like somebody else. But it's hard. It's like, and I, my, it just, it turns off. So it's like, those kinds of things. It's like, I appreciate that element of it. There are some really cool sequences that flashes between like reality and waking, or waking and non-waking, you know, moments that I enjoy about the remake. What was the other? There's something else that. I hate when that happens. Just left me, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just enjoy like those elements that I think are really fun. I hate, again, this is just, I mean, it's Michael Bay, it's Platinum Dunes, so, you know, CGI over every fucking thing, which I think hurts the film in some ways.
Yeah.
Because especially when you think about, like, the first sequence, like, they show, they kind of mimic it where he comes out of the wall.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think in the original, it's very much like a, you know, like a practical effect. Sure. And so having it, that sequence, I'm just like, oh, you could have just done practical. Like, I just, yeah. I think I really would have preferred a lot more practical stuff. And they do it with some, like, the wall, the wet dream that you laughed about, you know, like when the hallway becomes a pool of blood. Like, there are some cool practical effects in this. And I think when they merge, like, the sequence where she falls out of the ceiling and, like, the pool
in
of
the
blood,
blood
kind of mimics the Johnny Depp's death sequence in the original film. That's a nice mix of both.
Yeah. It's an homage, but it also is doing something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think they do a nice job of kind of with the CGI and the practical elements of that kind of coming together are really nice. But yeah, that's my big complaint about it is I wish there was less CGI, but it's just, that's the time period we're in, you know?
Yeah.
So something else that I guess the really big thing to compare and contrast between the two movies is the Freddy Krueger story, is the backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So Wes Craven, I think we talked about this on the original episode, which I'm going to try to remember to link below in the comments or in the show notes, is Wes Craven had wanted him to be a child molester. We're going to have to pop a big old like content warning on this episode. Mm-hmm. but the studio obviously didn't really want that, so they wanted him to just be like a child killer. You know, why molester? Just kill them.
Yeah. don't do anything to them other than kill them.
Yeah.
No. don't. Again, diddler on the roof, right?
You diddler on the roof. Is that what you're going to call this episode, Jesus?
Maybe.
Diddler in the boiler room.
a diddler on the roof. Sounds crazy, though. This is your god now.
Lawsuit.
Yeah.
Jail. I'm calling the police.
Yeah.
anyways, so that decision, you know, to make him more just like a child killer in the original. Mm-hmm. This one very much brings back like the pedophile molester vibe of it all. But I struggle with it a bit, because I think the story gets a little undermined. Like, I think there's something. So in the original, because we know that Fred Krueger was a child killer and he murdered children, so like the ghosts of those children are like showing up in the dreams, and there's like, you know, that's kind of an element of it.
Sure.
So this, it's more like he's doing whatever he's doing to these children, gets run out of town. It's kind of the same story, at least in like he gets set on fire by a vigilante mob of parents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play, in this film, they play with the is he, isn't he kind of thing. So they think he's a pedophile, so they burned him up, but the kids, you know, they've repressed the memories or they've forgotten.
There was no hard evidence.
Yeah, there wasn't hard evidence at the time. So they all think like, no, we're being hunted because he didn't do it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a late in the film reversal of that where, oh, he did do it. So he's like killing us because he's mad that we told is like the thing, and his obsession with Nancy, which also
again, I'm not an expert on pedophiles by any means,
but
I do know, and just from my studies,
from her studies,
you know, and you know, definitions of like, it's like most perpetrators of this kind of violence lose interest once the child reaches a certain age. So like his obsession with Nancy is also a little weird, because it's like, are you a pedophile, or you're like obsessed with just this girl who's now a teenager, practically an adult, which again, this is, it's such a strange conversation to be having, but it's something that like in reading about the film and reading about like the psychology of it, cause this is, you know, there's some cool articles out there talking about like, you know, the A Nightmare on Elm Street and, child molestation storylines within it, because there's something else about like the original film. It's really hard to like side with a pedophile, you know, like if Freddy Krueger, like Robert Englund's Freddy Krueger was a molester, is different than just being a killer of children. Not that it's all that better,
yeah,
but like that crime, those are two very different crimes.
Yeah.
And so, but people love Freddy Krueger, and he's kind of become an anti-hero and a drag queen. And we've kind of talked about these things before. He's funny, and he's got, you know, quippy one-liners.
He's campy. He's
campy.
He's fully aware that he knows what he's doing. He's
but
like,
if you're thinking like, wow, we all really love this like child molesting dream demon. It's fucked up, but that's not really the story in those. So they kind of bring him back to this kind of, you know, darker original intention that Wes Craven had.
The real world horror, as it were, of of the story of Fred Krueger.
Yeah. So in doing that, though, like you have to have consistency, I think, over what kind of crime that is and like the psychology of that.
Sure.
You know, so him sort of still being obsessed with her is weird to me. I don't think this is one story of one type of child molester.
Sure,
so maybe he is just obsessed with Nancy, and that's fine. We can accept it and move on. But just personally, like in defining like a pedophile, a lot of times they lose interest when the child reaches an age that they're not interested in, as you know, a euphemism. So that's weird. That whole side of it, I'm just like, I don't understand this. And two, I think actually making him a pedophile and him actually having done it undermines the whole fucking story, because they do this thing with like the Pied Piper of Hamelin early in the film where they make a reference to that. It's like, you know, oh, he's betrayed by a town and in return he steals all their children. I think that makes a lot more sense if he didn't do it. If he was completely innocent, like just a nice guy at a, you know, just friendly dude at the school who likes the kids and enjoys working with them and, you know, goes above and beyond his job to like make sure the kids are happy and safe, and the parents see something, you know, just so wrong in that and they kill him. And so as punishment for that, you know, he takes their kids, you know, he becomes a dream demon and takes their children. I just think that's it just makes more sense. So that's the other thing that I don't really like about the movie is in the end, he's not an innocent who's become a monster because others, you know,
like Candyman.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Candyman type story like that. I just think it would have been more interesting. Or if nothing else, should have had it proven that he did it when they killed him. And then it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just weird. It's like, you know, I'm angry because you were all right about me. And it's just, I don't know. Personally, that's an issue that I have with the remake. I think it would have been scarier and more interesting if he hadn't done it.
Well, it would have been more interesting for sure, because it's like we don't question in the first one that he did what he did. Like, it's just he was a killer and we all put him to death, but now he apparently is, you know, getting his revenge. There's no question about that he did it. And even in the Freddy's Nightmare series, there's no question he's unapologetic about doing it either.
Right.
So when you get to this thing, it's like, we know that the whole mention that he might be innocent was very, like, it was just kind of shoehorned in there. Like, I felt like it could have been a slower burn or a build up to that, to have some sort of like really dramatic scene where they're looking at documents and realizing that, oh my God, he could be innocent. And it would have been great to have that twist be like, actually, he is innocent. This is basically him being an angel of vengeance. You know, the crow. he's the angel of vengeance on the parents specifically because they were just doing it. But then it to me, it's also like, okay, where would they have gone with that? Because like someone was abusing these kids. So it's like, who could it have been? And yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately what would have been interesting is that only one of the kids had like marks and it was that kid's parent who was the abuser.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Which could have been really interesting. It could have been a really cool conversation about who actually harms children. Because a lot of these cases, it's somebody you know, it's a family member. As we've talked about in our work with like the Mini Monologues, the Vagina Monologues, you know, the person who's going to commit sexual assault, you probably know them.
Yeah.
It's not always some stranger in the bushes. So yeah, again, I think that would have added a really interesting element to the story that would have elevated it above and made it less confusing. Cause it's like, I'm mad because you told our secret. Like it tracks.
That's horrible. That's like very horrific, but it's from a horror narrative standpoint, we've already kind of seen it, and therefore, like, I think that's one thing that remakes do better now. Remakes, reboots do in our modern context is that they're not afraid to twist it a little bit, or either they commit or they get to that conclusion in a very different way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And what I was going to say is that a lot of people do report that is often the case, you know, where they're threatened by their perpetrator. Mm-hmm, you know, if you tell people, I'll hurt you, I'll hurt them, I'll hurt whoever, you know, so it's not that it doesn't totally track, you know, that he's like, you know, you broke our promise or whatever, but it's still, I don't know. I just think it would be a more interesting film and could really speak to some other things. So the fact that like, oh yeah, the weirdo at the school is actually, it just plays into a lot of the stereotypes we don't have historical reality when we look at who actually perpetrates this kind of crime. Mm-hmm. So it's just another, I'm, you know, psychology degreeing all over the place, but it's like, you know, there, like words mean something, you know, diagnoses mean something, behaviors mean something in the real world.
Sure.
And I think that it's a really delicate issue that this film does not handle. Could have handled better and made a much more interesting film. And again, would have, if you're going to remake a movie like A Nightmare on Elm Street, elevate it a little bit. So it's like, if he's not actually the perpetrator of this violence, that, I mean, it's just way more interesting. And I really like that idea of like, you know, finding out that one of their parents actually did it. You know, because Nancy, I guess it's the other girl.
Chris is the one who has the
claw marks.
Yeah.
But if they would have made it Nancy that it had the claw marks, because her father's like not in the picture in this film, you know, it's just the mother. So it's like, it would explain that, like, we blame this guy, but I was married to your father at the time and I wanted to ignore his, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just all this other interesting conversation that could have happened in the film about a very delicate issue. I'm not trying to make light of pedophilia or, you know, sexual assault or molestation. It's just, I think it could be a little bit more responsibly handled and had a conversation that was just, would have pushed it in a really interesting cultural conversation.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because this is also very much rooted in, so there was those like back when, during the satanic panic period of like the 80s, and then there were all those conversations about like, oh, these sex cults at like preschools, and then you find out that none of them did it. Like they put all these parents in jail and all of this like terrible stuff happened and it was all made up. It was all planted in their minds.
Yep.
And it was like, you know, just, this is insane. So playing with those ideas with a film that originally came out in the 80s, like in the midst of like those sorts of conversations, it would have just, for me, been a better film. Having said that, I enjoy this.
Yeah.
I have been pretty, you know, I give a lot of horror a curve. So while there are things I don't like about it, there are things that I do enjoy. It's an easy watch. It's easy to put on and kind of have as like a fun, like a pizza party and popcorn.
That's kind of what we did too. Like there were moments where like, okay, well, we're watching. And there were moments where we're like, you know, eating our burritos and just having a good time.
Yes, exactly. Oh, repressed memories. That's what I was going to say about that, because that was the thing with like the satanic panic and the, I can't remember what daycare it was.
Bedham?
No, in the film, yeah, but I was trying to remember the name of the actual, the real world. Molestation accusations that happened at the, what was that place called? Daycare, daycare sex abuse hysteria.
Was that your Google entry? Did you just type in K?
No, that's an actual Wikipedia thing. Kern County child abuse cases. That was one that was, but that's not the one I'm looking for. There was like a really specific. But yeah, there's a whole article here about the suggestibility of children. You know, it's easy to kind of plant suggestions in some ways. McMartin preschool trial in California. That's what I was thinking of, where I think a lot of the people involved were actually innocent. Martinsville scandal. That was in Saskatchewan, Canada. I listened to a podcast about that. That was tied up with the Satanic Panic cases. So again, I think this film had a lot of opportunity to have a conversation about that, but instead it kind of bent to just, you know, stereotypical. It just kind of killed the point for me. I just would have really loved if he had been innocent and this really was like a Pied Piper kind of situation. Something I was going to say, and you haven't seen them yet, but it'll come. So even though they said they weren't trying to combine some of the films, there are elements from some of the other films in this. Patricia Arquette's character in the Dream Warriors, she's like an artist. She like makes things. It's very much reminds me of that sequence where Nancy's like kind of up late at night painting or doing charcoal drawings. I think there's a sequence where her room, I don't know if it's snow or if it's ash, but that whole sequence reminds me of a sequence in another of the films. You know, there are just some things that I'm like, oh, this does hint, even though they said they kind of reversed on that choice. There are things that I'm like, oh yeah, that does kind of remind me of, you know, blah, blah sequence or that sequence. I don't know. I just wanted to say that for some reason. overall, I think it's fun. I'm not too, again, broken record. Nobody's breaking into this house and stealing my box set of the Nightmare on Elm Street films and telling me I can only watch Rooney Mara. who also, I think it's a bad rap. Like, there's all these complaints about her performance, but I'm like, she looks like somebody who's sleep deprived and is behaving like somebody who is sleep deprived. So it's like, it makes sense. Yes. Like we meet her, like when in the original film, we kind of meet them as at the beginning of it. So they're slowly becoming more and more sleep deprived and, but they don't really show it in a realistic way. Whereas this, she's already obviously been trying not to sleep for a while. Along with the others, like when Kellan Lutz at the beginning or Kellan.
Kellan, I think.
Kellan Lutz, whatever. I don't
Kellan know. Like Helen.
Helen Kellan. she looks really tired in the beginning with her baggy eyes and all of that. Which, oh, that
her
was
her 5 o'clock shadow.
That was something else I really like. So one of the things in the original film that I agree with an article I read that is that does bother me is the death of Rod. So the Tina's boyfriend. Who's in the room when she dies and he like goes on the run and you know, the whole thing where Nancy meets him in the bushes and it,
and then he dies in prison.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like the bed sheet like becomes a snake and like wraps around him and like hangs him. And it's kind of weird because it is this idea of like, well, Freddy's supposed to be like in your dream. So you're dying in your sleep based on something in the dream. So, but in the, I don't remember how he dies, how Freddy kills him in the dream. But the idea is that it makes it look like he committed suicide by hanging himself with the bed sheet. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, in the beginning, to everybody looking, he's slitting his own throat, but in the dream, you know, Freddy's doing it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of acted out in the real world. I like that better than like Rod's death.
Sure.
Because it's like, it doesn't, if he's only in the dream. So there's like some logic problems in the original film too, mm-hmm. that, again, not to say that there aren't logic problems in this as well, but just the idea of like, you know, he's looks like he's killing himself, but it is enacting in the dream, I like, rather than like, how did Freddy make a, outside of his dream consciousness, like make a bedsheet turn into like a snake? Like that's kind of a, so anyways, that was something else mentioned in an article that I was like, yeah, that's always bothered me too. I think that Rod deserved a better, quote unquote, better death.
Sure.
You know, a better logical death, but of course he's in prison, he's in jail, I mean, and he can't. For the logic of the film, it's not like they can make it something kind of fantastic or else the adults are going to believe like, oh, maybe something fishy is going on.
Sure, sure, sure.
Even though we all know we've hidden this death from our children. Mm-hmm. This murder we committed.
This murder.
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 I was trying to think of any other...
Were you doing Benoit Blanc?
Mm-hmm. Murder.
Now do Poirot.
Murder. Yeah, he'd be murder.
Implanted in them the idea of your murder.
Murder. Foghorn Leghorn. Shit. Anyways.
We've gone off the rails.
We are. We're always off the rails. Yeah, because we've watched the original, I wanted to show you the remake as a nice way to like kick off our... this deep dive. So next up, we'll be talking about the, you know, some of the sequels that have come.
Not all of them, right? Some of them.
Yeah, some
so
of them.
So stick around. Too.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, again, it is definitely my opinion. So we're going to watch the ones that I like. I like them all, but just...
But some more than others.
Yeah, and there are some
you
that
do
I
have a favorite child.
Yes, there are some that I'm not sure how we'd get a full episode out of talking about them, but... The others, I have ideas. So, yeah. And, you know, hopefully we may have a special guest. So that's always nice.
Yeah.
Which historically we have had, because our Freddy's Revenge, we had Jackie from the Jersey Goyles. Mm-hmm. On.
And last year for Scream, we had Brennan.
Yeah. Oh, well, I meant for this franchise.
Oh, yes, but for sure.
That's true. We had a bunch of guests last year. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Well, yeah, that's A Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake. Kicking off January here on Fright School with our deep dive into a franchise.
Yeah, Franchise January. We can come up with a better name.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. All righty. Well, Joe, good night.
Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.